You are listening to
Sannsynligvis viktig.
Today my guests are
Alessandra Cagnazzo
and
Annabelle Rodemeyer.
Alessandra, what is AIMS?
So AIMS is a company that was born as a spin-off of a research project of University of Oslo. And it was born 7 years ago, I don't remember correctly now, I think 2013. And we deal with monitoring of IT systems. What does this mean? Basically, everything nowadays has an IT system, and these things can be pretty complex. And they can have.
And we saw this actually 1 minute ago. Or...
Yeah.
It's a computer. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So there are multiple things that can go wrong, and especially big companies, they don't have full overview of what they have. I mean, we had a problem running a Teams call on a laptop right now. Imagine like I don't know, a company with the 5,000 workers with like 5,000 computers hooked up. I mean, it's impossible manually to know what is going on. So the best chance that we have is to actually have some automated monitoring tools that analyzes all the data coming out of this IT system and tells you something out of the ordinary is going on. Potentially, this might lead to some problem. So that's the aim of AIMS.
Aim of AIMS, excellent. And your name, who are you?
Yes. I'm Alessandra Cagnazzo, and I'm a data scientist, the data scientist that works for AIMS. I am Italian, and I am a physicist. And I moved outside of academia to start working with AIMS to start solving this problem of monitoring IT system. And my job is basically writing algorithms to make this thing work.
And today we are going to talk about a special project where we try to improve or make new algorithms.
Yes.
And Annabelle. First, who are you?
So my name is Annabelle Rodemeyer, and I'm a research scientist here at NR, Norwegian Computing Center.
And the project, why are we here? What is it?
The project is called PREVENT. It is an IPN project with the Research Council that was started in February of this year. PREVENT stands for Prediction of Events, or Prediction Plus Events.
Plus Events.
And it's essentially trying to help AIMS develop some of their algorithms for both the numerical data, the data that Alessandra was talking about, and then also with the help of logs or text data. And that's something that's completely new to AIMS.
So, and maybe we should talk about numerical data first. So what are the numerical data? What can you give an example?
So basically, there are a lot of numerical data that can come out from IT system. For example, the percentage of CPU that is in use, the how much is stored into a storage, how many emails are sent out, everything can be translated, not everything, but most of the things that are happening can be translated into a number. And what AIMS does is just collect these numbers of as time series, which means we take the numerical data and we attach to it the timestamp where the numerical data came. So you have a series of numbers with the timestamp, so we know when each number had come out of the IT system. And that's the starting point for the analysis.
Uh, And I think what's important is that we try to not infer things about the actual time series. We don't actually know what they are. We're trying to base all of the analysis off purely just the numbers, what has come before and what's happening now.
Yeah, exactly, because what we want to build is a fairly generic monitoring system. So nowadays, that analysis is pretty popular, and I think that if you want to survive, you have to have some form of data analysis in place. And you can very well do some sort of very customized data analysis, knowing like the nature of your data, knowing what type of resources, knowing, for example, I'm a physicist, so if there's a physical law behind, you can make use of that physical law to know better what is going on if our data from a sensor. But what we try to build is something that everyone can potentially use, and just take this monitoring tool, attach it to whatever IT system you have, and understand as much as possible out of your IT system. So we are not fussy with the nature of your company. We just try to analyze it at our best.
Yeah, let's now, for now, just imagine that we only have one time series of numerical data. And what do you want to do with that, Annabelle? What is difficult, or what do you want to detect? Or?
So we want to quickly point out if some of the values are anomalous or strange or out of the ordinary. And again, if we knew what the type of system we were monitoring was, we might be able to have good bounds or kind of understand what we typically would want to see. If we don't know what that is, we have to be a little bit more creative in figuring out what is normal and what is not normal. So the goal is to figure out what is anomalous, and we do so based off of the previous data, which could be weeks of data, could be months, could be years. And basically trying to detect if there's patterns in the data and when we see things that don't look like the patterns we've seen before.
That sounds like it could be like anything. That's
yeah, yep, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay, so now I have one time series, and Annabelle has found one strange thing in that time series, but now suddenly we have maybe 100 time series, or 1,000, or 10,000. What do we do then?
The real challenge is that when it comes to numerical data to time series, the real challenge is that we don't have one or two of these time series in an IT system. Typically, you can have hundreds of thousands of this time series, and everything means something, and just singularly taken might mean nothing, but like in combination with all the other time series might mean something, a lot, a threat. So we have to basically analyze real time all these time series at the same time, and then see also the connection correlations between time series, and build a model that takes into account all these time series at the same time. So, and this is also a part of the project, because a part of the project is dedicated to multivariate analysis. That means multivariate analysis means that we take into account more variables at the same time, so more time series at the same time, in such a way that we don't always say, okay, there was something weird here, something weird there, but there was something weird here and there and there and there, and considering all together this thing, that's the anomaly, that's the problem, that's the thing that is out of the ordinary.
And a simple example is if you take a series that is monitoring the temperature of a system, or basically how much is working, and then another time series, which is measuring, I don't know, the number of emails, and all of a sudden, if you see that one is going up while the other one is staying stationary, we know that they're related, that's when taking both into account makes sense. you wouldn't necessarily catch the problem if you looked at them separately. That's kind of what.
And if they were independent, then that situation would look different, right?
Then hopefully you wouldn't analyze them together.
No, exactly.
You would, yeah. So you would have to also have this step where you look to see if you have dependent series or not.
And are you looking for like some big strange stuff going on in a few time series that might be correlated, or medium, let's say medium strange everywhere, or what's the, or on how do you balance those?
Of course, it's a lot of trial and errors also on this part, but it's a research project in itself. But we have to consider that both can be a threat, and so depends also. We have to consider what is the correlation pattern between the things. If some resource, so just one time series, and that time series give you the health of all the full resource, of course, it's just a deviation on that time series is important to that that type of resource. So you have to keep an eye on that. But also, maybe there's another resource in which there are like 2 million time series. Yeah. That's a lot. But in that case, probably this in this resource, like the variation of just one time series is less severe with respect to the other resource. So what we try to combine all this information, all this stuff, we try to combine into like something that we call AIMS score. So it's a number that the user can just see and see, okay, this number is close to 100, so everything is going fine. This number is going close to 50. Yeah, I mean, most of the things are working, but yeah, there's something that might require my attention. And then if it's zero, nothing is going as it used to go. Might be completely fine, you know, if you redeploy all your resources in like one day, most probably everything will be different. And if you know it, it's fine. But we try just to condensate the information in something like that. Then you can go down, drill down and see, okay, this score is zero in this resource because there's just one time series there. That time series as an anomaly, and therefore that's the only thing that we can say for this resource. The score, yes, is zero because that was anomalous. I'll go and drill down to the other resource with 2 million time series, and you see, there the score, it was like 70, but maybe it was like a severe deviation on a bunch of anomalies. And so we try to enable different views on the IT system in such a way that you can just keep an eye on the score and say, okay, roughly this is what's going on, or go down and see where exactly the deviation is occurring and where you have to act. And for this reason, we have like these topologies that will allow to, like maps that will allow to you to go and drill down into different resources from the point of view like of the design, because we have a physical topology, as we call, and it's basically what we know from the design of the parts that you have built together.
The data IT system.
Exactly. Yeah, of the IT system. Or like we have a correlation topology, that is a map built just through correlations, which you click on one resource, so you see all the other resources that are mathematically correlated to that. And in the future, we plan to have also like more business view. So you can create your own map just with the resources that you want to keep under control and just drill down on that part, have your own score just for the resources that you are interested
care
in.
About,
yeah.
Yeah, I was going to add to, I don't know if it was a question or a statement, but it sort of depends how much you can act on. There's no point of, you know, alerting on 10,000 metrics if you have one person that is in charge of looking at that. So in that sense, if you have a rather, you know, small team, you might want to just alert on some of the larger problems otherwise. Yeah, so it's also the number of alerts is kind of important.
And it sounds like this is a lot of data, or and not just a lot, but a lot. so I guess you have some tricks in Ames, but also that these algorithms have to be really fast.
Yeah.
How do you make them both clever and fast?
So, of course, we have the research project to make everything better. But already now we have in place like a lot of pre-processing of the data, pre-analysis, which we try to single out which are the time series that are more interesting. Also, which is like the time scale of each time series, because it's pointless to have like live detection on something that wakes up every week. So
or it doesn't change.
It doesn't change at all. Mm. So it's good to check frequently on this type of metrics and this type of time series. We call them also metrics. But
the metrics is sort of everywhere. It's a word you can use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All encompassing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just an intelligent design there of the what, the anomaly detection and of the analysis that we just do it in on different time scales in such a way that nothing goes unseen, but we don't overload with information.
And I think the fact that we have so much data means that we can't necessarily pick the best algorithm. We might have to pick the best, which is a little bit faster. And that's something that's kind of unusual for a statistician to pick the one that's going to be a little bit faster, even if a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Because it will be useless if it takes. It's like the when the first weather forecasts were made, they took
2 days.
2 days. To
then it was already the past.
Exactly. You mentioned, or we had talked a lot about numerical data, but there's also a second data source, which is
these text events or
and
logs.
What are they?
These are computer, mostly based messages that alert or explain what's going on in the system.
Could you give like a really sort of stylized example? Or
yeah, you know, Windows shut down or this person email didn't work. I mean, that's a bad example, but it's computer language more or less with some human words, lots of paths and numbers and things like that. But there's some information we can get just by reading them.
And why can't we just rely on numerical data?
So numerical data gives us just a partial overview. Not everything is happening in an IT system is translated to a numerical data. There are resources that might not give any numerical data or any variable numerical data, just spitting out zeros all the time, no matter what, and then have maybe they stop, and the only thing that you have is a log saying this service has stopped, and that's it. So it's important. It's very important to have an overview on both things. Also, because even if you have both, the numerical data can tell you that something had been happening, and the log maybe contains what
actually happened.
So it's you have to look at the two things at the same time if you really want the full picture.
And how do we deal with this? I mean, what kind of techniques can we use to deal with these logs?
So some of the challenges is that we have a different scale for the logs. We have these numerical values that are more or less every second or minute, whereas the logs can kind of be absent for, you know, much of the process, or be all of a sudden sort of occurring very quickly. And then they're also applied on not just the individual time series, but groups of time series that pertain to parts of the system. We started to use some tools from natural language processing to see if we can group these logs into sort of smaller subgroups. There are tends to be lots of parameters in these logs, like these numbers that are not so important. So the what we've been doing, the groups are sort of the parts that don't change. So everything but the parameters. And if we can kind of extract those, then we might be able to build some kind of, again, a model for a pattern based on just these templates is what we call them. And if the templates start to look very different than what we've seen before, then we can act and we can say something about the logs.
And I guess these logs are kind of computer tries to speak human language. So it's, I guess it will be fun to see how it sort of differs from, or how, if you can use like more standard NLP techniques to analyze them.
That's true, that's a very good point. We tend to, or natural language processing tools are usually based off of texts and usually longer texts, essays and emails and reviews. That's why right now we're starting simple. We're starting to just see if we can kind of extract some parts of the logs themselves rather than kind of analyze what the actual logs mean, if that makes sense.
Yeah, also, as Annabelle was saying before, performance is something that we strive for. So having something that works in a finite amount of time next to real time. And for this reason, we are not going down the path like full NLP fancy algorithm, but we try to get the best out of the combination because we are in the position in which we have both the numerical and the logs. So we want to build something that uses both these words and takes the best out of it in a short time. So it's some new approach, I think, from the point, also from the point of view of the, we cannot say natural, but from language processing point of view, it's some sort of new approach.
And if you go back to the name of the project, Prevent Prediction Plus Event. So I guess we have been talking about events, but we haven't touched so
on the prediction.
On the prediction. So what does that mean?
We want to become as predictive as possible. We have been building like a product up to now that is mostly reactive, because we just alert when something is going out of the ordinary. But we want to go more and more into the direction of saying, okay, something might go out of the ordinary soon. So using all the patterns that we are seeing and we are highlighting, we want just to alert faster and faster, even before the something is happening. So, of course, now we are diving in into patterns very deeply and very seriously with this research project. So it's kind of natural to think to use this as predictive as possible.
Yes, and natural language processing can of course be a part of this. You said natural. Oh, it's just a bad joke. but this prediction, would you then predict that something strange is maybe going to happen in 10 minutes or one day in one time series or per log? Or would you do it on a more aggregated?
Ideally, you want to keep the structure of the most aggregated and integrated way as possible also because that is the information that is useful. But that's also always the art of balance, because you don't want to impose too many overstructure, too many interpretation on the data that you have, that just you don't want to bias what you have there. So yeah, there's a lot to research in this, and this is a research project. So.
Yeah, and we haven't really talked about, we talked about multivariate for the numerical data. We haven't talked actually yet about if we can combine the numerical and the logs. Maybe I'm skipping ahead.
No,
but I wonder if that would also be part of the prediction thing, where you try to use the numerical data to predict the logs, or vice versa. And I know Alessandro already said that there's information in the numerical data, or vice versa. There's information in the logs that you don't necessarily see in the numerical data, but I wonder if there are certain cases where you might be able to use one to help the other. And but it's still kind of an open question how we're going to do the prediction part.
Because you could also imagine that you sort of group or correlate stuff first and then try to predict on the aggregated level. So we think there's going to be a problem in this part of the system, maybe I'm...
Yeah.
But it's, yes, that's...
That's a very different approach from predicting every single log or every single time series or every...
Yes, and that's also in line with what we have today, that is like this, for example, correlation topology. You look at the, once you know that these things are mathematically correlated, we can open the Pandora box and talk about what is mathematical correlation, how it's connected with causation, but we don't go there. But these things are mathematically correlated, so it makes sense to look at these things together. And so it's how are we going to rise on alert for all these things at the same time? And that's quite some fun in that part too. And we will go there at a certain point.
And I see that in Ames you say that you want to do this for every kind of system.
Yeah.
And why not just stick to computer systems?
I mean, of course, it's we have if at the in the moment in which we have something that is generic enough to take whatever type of computer system we have something that is not, it doesn't have to be like a computer system, but also at the same time, I mean, try to find nowadays some human activity that doesn't go through somehow digitalization. So of course it has to be digitalized in some way in order to have automatic monitoring, because we are not doing like automatic monitoring or like some handwritten register.
So it basically means that in principle any system that is logging and recording numbers and logs could be interesting for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, if you want like to go deep, like discovery level, I wouldn't suggest to my colleagues physicists at CERN to use AIMS to claim a discovery on, because there you need
the physics, of course.
You need the physics, you need more modeling on top of that. So, but to have like an insight on what is going on big sets of data, I think that I would suggest to my colleagues at CERN to use it to say if everything is going smooth, if all their
computers
are aligned, that which is pretty critical.
Then we are approaching the, let's say, the end of this podcast. Is there anything, I have certain questions I want to ask you, but is there anything
mentioned this before, and maybe because now I'm used to this project, so I don't bring it up as much. But a big challenge with this project is, at least from a statistical point of view, is that there is no
labels. We don't have labeled data. And in a sense, it's almost better because then we can really use what's being developed at Ames for any type of system, regardless of if you have labels. But I think that's it was hard to wrap my head around that at the beginning and find methods that could approach that. I didn't want to leave without saying that.
No, but it's actually maybe the first time I heard someone sort of being happy for not having labels.
No, 6 months later.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nice to hear.
No, but I know from other fields like money laundering, for example, that we have certain labels. Labels means no cases. But we also know that we don't have all labels. Mm. So if you start to train your system on the known labels, you are sort of certain that you will not find the unknown labels that maybe are more critical.
Yeah.
So this is a very interesting point that is sort of deserves a whole podcast series.
And also, what the need for AIMS came out of the market, because not everyone has the resources to label all their data. You really need a team of people just sitting there and saying, this was okay, this was not okay. Just to say, okay, not okay. You really need a team of people. And that's what you don't want to invest on, unless you're like a huge company that can afford to just...
But even, I mean, if you have a million time series, who can label?
No, you cannot label all of them. And also, it's really a miserable job for a human being to sit there.
And it's probably wrong anyway.
Yeah, and it will be anyway biased. And so there are...
Excellent. So then we agree, no labels.
No labels whatsoever.
Perfect.
We destroy all the machine learning and the neural network community now.
Excellent. So now I'm approaching very fast my two questions that every guest has to answer or try to answer. And no answers are wrong here. So Alessandra, I'll start with you.
Mm-hmm.
So the first question is, if you look back to your studies, or so maybe PhD or maybe before, or maybe even could be kindergarten or whatever, what do you think of now that's sort of been useful or that you look back to with joy or with...
So when I think about my studies as a physicist, I was in the field of mathematical physics. I pretty much started going that direction immediately when I started to study, taking the most theoretical courses and at the math department and all this. So I was very much into mathematical modeling and structures and all this. So that was not a big gap between like being a mathematical physicist and being a data scientist that I brought it with me. And also, if I look at the math that is used in machine learning, so when we talk about feature spaces and all these things, they have a correspondent into mathematical physics, into physics. So we can call them Hilbert space, and everything sounds more fancy. But the mathematical bases are the same. Of course, the job is different. It's pretty much also this thing of the performance is always something that is making the two world completely different, because I was used to find the best model, and now I'm finding the best model, but the definition of best changed.
Annabelle?
I did my master's on two very, very different topics. I tried to...
So you did your master's on two topics instead of one?
I tried to make one topic because I really wanted to work with two different people in different areas. And it turned out that it was a really funky project. But I think that really has kind of helped try to bridge two worlds, this NLP, which based on just text, and then this numerical world, which feels a little bit more statistic-y and with numbers and things. So I think that's helped trying to combine expertise and make some compromises along the way and to try to combine different expertise.
And then the final question, I don't know if this is the correct English term, but the school of life. So what?
It works.
Yeah, it works. Oh, excellent. It's good to hear. Thank you. So what has the school of life, what is your...
School of life. I had to change my path a lot of times. I moved around in different countries, and I was someone that I thought, like, when I was 12, I've figured it all out. Yeah, yes, I'm going to do classical studies in high school, but then I will move to scientific studies, and then I will go to physics, and then I will have an academic career, and then I will be forever in my hometown. Of course, that's not happening. Academia doesn't help at all in all these things. It's very difficult to pursue an academic career. So, and doesn't go well with the life balance and private life balance. But what it taught me is to change, to be open to change and going here and there, but from my studies, from like university, but also moving around Germany, Sweden, I built my network, and now I have a lot of former colleagues that are still colleagues, and I know, and I can talk with them about problems and mathematics and modeling and all these things. So, and also I learned to not take it for granted and just rebuild completely, taking your experience. You don't trash anything. I learned that you don't need to trash all your previous experiences, even if it seems so far away.
Annabelle?
Is the question, what has School of Life taught me? Or yes. How does it relate to the project? Or
no, what has it taught you, like personally?
Alessandro's answer was so good.
It doesn't have to be. You're not allowed to copy it.
I don't want to copy it at all. Hmm. I think that Well, my answer is going to be about what I'm learning now, because I still feel like I'm learning things every day. But when I was younger, I really wanted to just be the best of everything and always be super, super prepared for things, and I'm still like that. But this project has really shown me the value of relying on other people and sort of learning from other people and not having to be the one that knows everything or most things in the room. And so that's my answer.
It's a very good answer from both of you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
This is
a podcast made by
Norsk Grensentral.